Good morning. We're going to call this session of the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner to order. It is March 10th, 2016. We have two items on the agenda today for open record public hearing. The first is known as the Sprague McNeil Shared Pier Ramp and Float with Tram Access. File 1502338. This is an application for a shoreline substantial development permit. We're going to hear that application first. The second one scheduled for hearing today is known as the Hogan Heights Preliminary Plat application, 1502528. And this is seeking approval for subdivision of approximately 10 acres of land in 61 single family residential lots. In each of these hearings, it is my responsibility, I'm Ted Hunter of Sound Law Center, to listen to testimony from the applicant who has the burden of proof to show it should be approved, from professional staff who have analyzed the application and made a recommendation based on exhibits that we have in front of us, and from any others that have questions, comments, or concerns. This morning is a bit unusual in that there have been power outages and ferry delays and some challenges in getting the hearing started. At 10:36, we convened the hearing that was set for 10 a.m. This power was restored shortly before 10:36. I'm noting for the record that public notice was given of the hearings, and it was a determination jointly made by myself and the county that it is appropriate to move forward with these hearings. We were prepared to do it without recording, but I believe now we have recording in place and we are making a full recording of these hearings. In each hearing, it's important that testimony be given under oath or affirmation. If there is an appeal of the decision that I make, it's based only on the record that's prepared in this hearing today. The record consists of the exhibits that are admitted and the testimony that's given. In advance of the hearing on the Sprague McNeil application, I received and reviewed 17 exhibits. I'm not going to read each one, but let you know that generally they consist of the application. There was what's known as a JARPA application for the substantial development permit. We have a site plan with the dock and tram design. We have some photos of the site. There's a joint use agreement here between the Sprague's and we have an Army Corps nationwide permit, geologic assessment, biological evaluation. It did go through this application, State Environmental Policy Act review, and a mitigated determination of non-significance was issued. And then we have notice of this hearing today. I do have a question about notice I'll bring up in a bit, but I'll make the finding now that reasonable notice was given based on Exhibit 17, which is certification of the public notice. We have present in the hearing room today on this application the applicant and the applicant's representative. Or maybe identify.
I'm Scott Sprague and I'm the applicant, and this is my wife Jeannie McNeil.
Oh, okay.
And
that's the Sprague McNeil.
Well, almost. No. It's a little more complicated. The two properties are Jeannie and myself and her brother Ross and Ingrid own the property next door, but they're working in Texas right now, so we're building it together directly on the property line as a shared dock.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. So the applicants are in here, or some of the applicants, along with Mr. Steve Peacock, who has conducted the professional plan of review of this application. So what is your preference? Did you want to begin, Mr. Peacock, with the staff presentation?
Yes.
We'll hear from the applicant. And as I noted, no one else is here with questions or comments or concerns, so we can have an abbreviated presentation.
That sounds great.
So I'm admitting exhibits 1 through 17 and now administering the oath to Mr. Peacock. Do you swear to tell truth in testimony you give today?
I do. Thank you. Again, Steve Peacock. I'm a senior environmental planner with the Department of Community Development, Development Services and Engineering Division. And a little bit of bookkeeping that I'd like to present an additional item that is from our previous postponement issued on the on February 11th, relating to the postponement of last hearing. And I do have an additional copy here for the record. That was provided to all of the interested parties. Well, we didn't really have any interested parties, but certainly was transmitted to all of the typical fish and wildlife tribes, Department of Ecology, et cetera, and so forth. So they were all notified of that information.
Can you copy that for the record for you
today?
Okay. So this exhibit 18.
Right. The only other item for bookkeeping purposes, if you will, is related to a phone conversation that I had with a neighbor that is not a direct neighbor, certainly, but a neighbor generally interested in how maintenance is performed in Kitsap County. And so we do and did explain that to this individual via telephone. She was definitely in support of the project, but it was more of a situation where she had noticed in this area that were quite a few shoreline amenities that were not that just did not seem tidy to her, was her exact words. And so I said, well, you know, it's interesting because in Kitsap County government, it's a complaint-based county. The only thing that we have codified, though, that requires action is in relation to a typical, not so much a dock, but a shoreline rail, a rail to the shoreline. And if it's no longer a functioning item on the property, that there is an actual action that the county can take to make sure that that rail is either repaired through permitting or demolished because of that whole aspect of fisheries. Obviously, a dock is visible, you know, on the upper surface, but the constraint is that a marine rail does not have, you don't have the ability to see it. So if you're a tribal fisherman or someone typically using the shoreline, it is a potential navigation hazard as well because you can't see it. So that's that requirement. I explained that to her, and she was quite satisfied. And again, she supported the dock, the rebuild of this particular dock, and was pleased that it was going to look nice. So there you have it.
Okay, we'll take note of that.
Right. All right, so before us is essentially an expansion of an existing dock, is how we have analyzed this particular project. There's a historical dock on the Sprague property. It is a dock that was built many years ago using creosote treated materials. Also, the lack of adequate grading and things like that on that old dock feature was still functioning, but its life was ending, if you will. And so in relation to that, the applicant did apply for a staff consultation, and we had a meeting with them about how they should proceed with replacing this particular dock feature, dock and float. And so the applicant had the meeting with us and also with Fish and Wildlife, had a discussion about all the requirements, and then proceeded with those requirements. So as you are probably very aware, we have a requirement now in the new shoreline code that's been implemented since December 24th of 2014, requiring applicants to go forth and seek federal permits prior to coming to the county with a permit application for shoreline substantial development for a dock feature. And indeed, the applicant did that and applied for the dock, provided all the necessary environmental documents to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and was successful in getting their nationwide permit to be able to construct. One of the reasons that
that's part of our record.
Yeah, and that is part of the record. Absolutely. Yes, indeed. Right. So that is all in place. As this is an existing dock, the only thing we ask the applicant to do would be to seek additional users for a dock if it were to be expanded in this place. It did not require that they seek outside moorage investigations, because they really do have an existing moorage location on the site. But because it was inadequate, it was grounding, it was constructed of creosote materials, et cetera, and so forth, and was did not meet the light penetration requirements from Fish and Wildlife, that the applicant then proceeded with the process of seeing what a dock proposal would be like on the property. So again, went through the biological evaluation procedure, Fish and Wildlife, and also Army Corps again, and with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as well into that. And again, you know, successfully received their nationwide permit, as we mentioned.
Now, you mentioned the new shoreline code effective December 2014.
Yes.
Did the shoreline designation of this site change in that date for the shoreline?
That's a really good question. It did not principally change in relation to shoreline activities or shoreline uses. If we were looking at a residential building, if you will, on the property, the buffers would have changed. But in a shoreline use of a dock feature, there is no, because it's obviously a water-dependent use, there is no buffer requirement in relation to that. There's typically just mitigation that's required.
So the shoreline designation itself remains what?
The shoreline designation for this property is called Shoreline Residential, and it's in buffer requirements related to single family, it would require an 85-foot base buffer plus a 15-foot building construction line.
It's shoreline residential.
Yes.
Is there then a zoning designation too?
So there is a zoning designation on the property stated as rural protection. So the property was previously subdivided prior to that designation. It's considered a grandfathered use as a smaller property because the shoreline, the rural protection zone, minimum zone for any new developments in that area would require it to be a 10-acre parcel. So this is a grandfathered a grandfathered use, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
You mentioned too in your remarks that there would be some design features intended to enhance the shoreline area. And two of them, I think you mentioned, were graded decking. And also in your staff report, you spoke to mitigation involving removal of black bears.
Yes.
Also, there's a stair on the site now. Mm-hmm. Did you look at that and how that might be integrated with the proposed use service. Tell me about those three.
Yeah, things. The beach stair itself can remain. It is okay for that to remain. The detail of the use to get right down to the shoreline would allow that stairway to be rebuilt. That would just be through a building permit, essentially. But the review in relation to the tramway, which is also a permitted use, if you will, to access that portion of the shoreline. The tramway construction and the tramway ingress, egress, if you will, to the dock, the pier ramp and float is really, I thought, a really good presentation to alleviate the concerns of the slope. The slope is very steep on this particular site. And through the geotechnical evaluation that the applicant received, and also the detail of the tramway design, it will greatly reduce the impacts of transit to and from the dock facility itself. Okay. It would be great.
The applicant's here, and we'll ask them about it too. Yeah. But it's your impression then that the tram would be basically replacing stairs?
There is a stair, I believe, that goes down from there, but it's that stair is an old feature. We can look at the photos here in just a second.
And mostly I was curious about the mitigation. Removal of stairs.
The majority of the mitigation will really be the removal of the old dock feature, the creosote pilings, and the associated blackberries that are, the Himalayan blackberries are prolific throughout the site and the slope, and that will be part of the mitigation as well. And then obviously the light transmission of the pier ramp and float will also meet the state fish and wildlife design criteria, and we go over that in toward the end of the staff report.
Is that, and that is in your staff
yes.
report?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
It's part of the conditioning?
Uh-huh. Yes. That is.
They not have made it in to these facilities. That is the understanding. That's fairly
clear. Well, that's absolutely correct. And as the next phase of the project will occur in relation to seeking application with the State Fish and Wildlife Department through the hydraulic project approval process, mm-hmm. you have as a condition of the following requirements for obtaining the building permit itself, the HPA will guide that it will, you know, there'll be light penetration that will occur, that there's adequate light penetration for both the pier ramp and the float itself.
Okay.
And there's a specific standard to that.
Right. That's where you would like to see that kind
yes,
of detail.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's a lot of blackberries to remove.
Yes.
Mitigation.
Yeah.
How did you see the timing of that? Is that something that you done?
Typically, blackberry removal is typically guided for a fall activity, as the plants are actively storing sugars, getting in preparation for winter, that the best way for blackberry removal is to do so in fall months, as the plant is cut and either chemically treated or pulled from the ground, then it can it has a problem surviving over the winter months. So the fall is the best time to do that.
The reason I ask it too is just often in a shoreline permit such as this, it goes to the ecology review as well.
Yes.
That litigation that you just testified to is explicitly detailed.
Yes.
I don't see it on the conditions that you're recommending. Is that detailed in some other permit, perhaps?
Oh, well, there is a habitat report that is part of the record. And let me see if I can find that in here. Document. I think that we've got... under the biological evaluation, that there was a component of that, if I recall, looking through that, that has that detail of the blackberry. Let me see here. Yeah, so if we'll look at the biological evaluation exhibit, we have some detail of that, if I recall.
And you didn't tie that into your conditioning, but you said something.
Well, we could certainly add that as a condition, because it will be a condition of the permit itself. I would in fact entertain that we might add an additional comment in relation to that, because it is a point, and then we have here.
The reason I'm asking about it is I don't want to be the misunderstanding
right
down the road as to what the conditions might be. So one purpose of the hearing is to make certain that applicant and county are on the same page
right
as to what might be expected to happen.
Absolutely. It's in the body of the staff report that we talked about, but I did not create a separate condition. So I would entertain, let's add a condition that we can call... That is part of the. It is part of the overall document guiding the planting plan itself in the main file of the project, which mm-hmm. is exhibit. Dock plan set. So exhibit 12 does detail that. But let's add a condition that provides for invasive weed removal per the plan set under exhibit 12, the dock plan set. That does have a detail on the weed invasion. Which is on sheet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Fish and Wildlife.
Because I'm asking, I'm curious where you came up with the proposed mitigation. The reference is either 10 biological evaluation.
Yeah.
Is it in there where there's it's a lot of
That's mostly the benthic requirement.
Right, so it's not there.
Yeah, the consultation with State Fish and Wildlife was part of that. I thought that was in this benthic, part of this benthic study.
Well, if there's no objections, it can be added. I just didn't see any basis
for it. Let's just add that as a note that the invasive species removal will be a condition of approval, and that approval would typically happen at the time we would add a inspection as part of the building permit itself. The applicant has submitted the building permit with the county, and it's on hold right now, just pending the review of this application. And as I understand, that part of that document is in fact the invasive weed management plan, specific plan. It is submitted as part of the record in the building permit as well.
Did you come up with 4,600 square feet?
It's essentially the area that's on the site that is covered in the invasive blackberries.
I see
that's on there. Yeah.
You see, this timing of this is at some point.
I would recommend a timing for an activity like that to be in the fall. That would be the best.
With reference to the post shoreline development, it could be any fall?
Yes, it could be.
Okay, so you're not looking for removal next year.
No, and what we would do typically is that if there is a removal that would be, or a vegetation management plan that would be implemented at the time of the after a final, if you will, for a dock feature itself. So in other words, if they wanted to construct all the activities, have all the timing, and get their occupancy to be able to use the material, that we would typically require a bond for that activity to make sure that it would happen. And that's that would not be unusual, but we would do that as part of the building permit review itself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there anything more that you wanted to add as far as your review of this application?
No, in the biological evaluation and the detail of the benthic discoveries on the site, there were no issues or concerns. The applicant does have and has applied for and received their hydraulic project approval from Fish and Wildlife, which is excellent. So
is that part of the record?
That is not, but it is submitted with the building permit, so we do have that on record as part of the building permit. And it does detail the grading, functional grading, et cetera, and so forth. It's, mm-hmm. it's done to that specification. So that's good. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chief.
Thank you very much.
Delivering your report and recommendation and answering questions I have. You have applicants here. I'll ask you now to both take the oath and raise your hands. Which of you swear to tell the truth? Yes.
I do.
Well, you've heard the dialogue with staff, heard the presentation of staff. You've been very patient through this process. Anything you'd like to add about your proposal? And please, before you do, state your name.
Yeah, Scott Sprague. I'm the applicant. And we do have a planting plan that's by a certified professional horticulturalist. And it was submitted with the building permit.
Okay.
But it was made a little more recently than the shoreline submittal. We didn't know we needed it for that. But anyway, it's part of the building permit. It has been submitted.
And what is your plan for the plant generally?
Actually, there are the blackberries, the invasives. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of English ivy on the slope as well.
That's right.
And we've already taken out a couple of truckloads of it, but of course it's tenacious.
Yeah.
My wife is a horticulturalist and also has EcoPro and certified professional horticulturist. So she's working on this, and we have a planting plan here, and we did submit it with the building permit. So
planting plan, because you recognize removal alone isn't going to do it, is it?
You right.
Get something in place, shade, make sure it doesn't come back.
Right. So there are plant lists here and a plan.
Okay.
So I wrote a letter stating to Army Corps, stating what would be done at the beginning of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Removal. Replanting, but retention of plant material that provides wildlife habitat.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a plum tree. There are a few things that already provide habitat and food, seasonal food.
Okay.
So the plant material is native plant material and shelter, food, habitat.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also plant material that should thrive on an eastern bank without full day sun. So the planting had to be thought through for that, for evergreen qualities, for,
mm-hmm.
you know, food. So it's thoughtfully done. Now, if any of you have ever done plants, you know, we hope to succeed.
Yeah, that's great. It takes ongoing care. Excellent. Well, it sounds like you've got a lot of work to think about how best to restore a slope to its more natural condition without the invasive plants. Have you had a chance, Mr. Spray, to look at those conditions the county's recommending?
Yes, I read through them, and they looked fine. I didn't see anything that we hadn't already anticipated or couldn't handle. It all looked good.
And when do you plan to get going on the actual removal or not? Is that underway already? Or?
No, we haven't done anything yet on site. I'm tentatively starting some. We have 3 acres of commercial property where I run my business, and so I'm cautiously building things there for it, but we haven't done anything on site except quite a bit of removal of ivy. The English ivy was 4 feet thick in certain areas, so it's massive.
Yeah.
And so a couple truckloads went out of that already, but it's still there. But other than that, we haven't done anything. We contacted Thompson Pile Driving to do the work, and are coordinating with them. The work would be done. There's work windows that we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be this summer, basically.
Good. Well, from all accounts, it looks like an excellent project, one that enhances the shoreline, gets rid of a problematic dock. Are you using the dock now at all? Or?
We have a boat on the dock. Yeah, it's a rowboat.
Mm-hmm.
It's not adequate to put our sailboat. We built a boat for ourselves back in the 80s, and 42-foot sailboat. So it's a 6.5-foot draft. So the dock was actually brought out just enough to keep clearance on the lowest of tides, the keel, so it wouldn't ground out, and pretty much designed around our boat. So
okay. and it would be a good enhancement for you as well as for the environment.
Yes. And I mean, I knew what ahead of time what the current thinking was on waterfront structures. Mm-hmm. So we went to we using a aluminum truss kind of system, we were able to get a big span, use a lot less pilings than traditionally would be used,
mm-hmm.
And then all fiberglass grating on there, so the whole all the pier and ramp, which is 75% of it probably, is all transparent right there. And then, of course, the float itself is largely transparent, as much as we could possibly get. And according to the rules there are that are laid down, so the whole thing was made to be acceptable in a modern sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the old creosote pilings and pressure treated floats and things, they ground out on every tide, and they're falling apart, and eventually they would start coming apart and floating around. But anyway, when Thompson is there to do the work, they'll remove all that stuff. And so it should clean up the beach a lot.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. You're in a heavily regulated area, as you know, the shorelines of the state of Washington. And part of the review is what the county's done under a shoreline master program. And it does get sent to the Department of Ecology, and they have an opportunity for review as well. But it appears to me, based on the testimony today and the exhibits that I've reviewed in advance of the hearing, that there is no reason not to approve it, and that it will be approved right away. Not officially until you get the writing, but I'll have that within the next 10 minutes.
Thank you.
You've been patient through this process. Appreciate that you came back today and waded through the power outage to get this hearing completed.
Excellent.
So thank you for your presence today and your testimony. And it sounds like an excellent project. Move that right along.
Thank you very much.
Great.
So I'm closing the record on the Sprague McNeil application. Decision approval to be issued within the next 10 days. And we move next to the plat hearing.
Do
you want just a quick 2-minute break and then we'll start the next application? Who's Meg?
I think Meg has gone to get the applicant representative.
So we're still on the record here, but we will.
It's a great place to watch the storm clouds go by out there.
Okay, we're moving right into the next hearing. We're still on the record, so we are being recorded. And we have next an application seeking approval of preliminary plat. This is known as the Hogan Heights preliminary plat. We introduced it at the outset of the hearing today with appropriate file numbers, et cetera, and also gave overview of what we're doing in this open record hearing to receive testimony from professional staff of the county who are present today and from the applicant's representative and from anyone else that has questions, comments, or concerns. I'm noting for the record that there is no one else present other than the staff and the applicant's representative. So we are able to do an abbreviated hearing and get this material in front of me as the decision maker. For the information of the applicant's representative, I'm Ted Hunter, Assigned Law Center, who's been charged to hear and decide certain applications and appeals, including this application for preliminary plat. I based my decision only on the record created in the hearing room today, and that consists of the exhibits that are admitted into the record and the testimony that's given under oath. We'll get to testimony in a minute. I'll note for the record that I've reviewed in advance of the hearing 33 exhibits. I'm not going to read them all into the record, but I'll note that they consist of the application, the State Environmental Policy Act review, the checklist, NDNS, a geotechnical report, a report on sewer and water availability, a drainage report, some zoning maps and comprehensive plan and critical area maps, the assessor parcels map. We do have, and perhaps the planner will speak to this, an interested party comment. Make sure we take into that as you're able to attend the hearing or submit your comments. We do have comments from the health district and the preliminary plat map itself. Some emails from the applicant's representative to the county. Memoranda from Candy herself and Meg Sands, both are here today as county staff. Then we have notice of the public hearing, the staff report, and the certification of notice. Based on my review of the certification of notice, I'm making a finding now that reasonable notice of this open record hearing was given. And as you noted, the earlier hearing, although there was some challenges with power outages, this hearing is able to begin without too much delays, 11:15, able to continue because the power was restored. Okay, so Commissioner Sands is here. I'll ask you to take the oath. You swear to tell truth and testimony you give today.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. So you conducted a review of these exhibits that I just noted and prepared the staff report. Do you want to give a summary of what you found?
Yes. And like you mentioned, there's no other people from the public here to testify, so we're looking at a contested hearing, although we do have a public comment and people address that as I run through. I do have, in addition to the 33 exhibits that you mentioned, the slides for the PowerPoint here. So,
she's bringing those forward, marked as Exhibit 34, and entered into this record.
And as you noted, proper notice was given, and that's Exhibit 33 in the record. You know which one that would be. In the context of SEPA, mitigated DNS was issued. That is Exhibit 27 in the record. There was no appeal of the SEPA decision, so therefore that decision is final, and we'll just be hearing the preliminary subdivision request. There were conditions noted with regard to the mitigated, and that's conditions 28 and 50 in the staff report, so you know where those fall in the context of the overall project. And with that, just to reiterate, because you mentioned it at the very beginning of both hearings, but the request essentially is to subdivide 10 acres into 61 lots. There's two separate lots, each are 5 acres in size, for a total of 10 acres. Those will be detached single-family residences with detached garage. That's a proposal to develop each lot with. There's also been a phasing outline, and you'll see that as I run through the presentation, and graphically to kind of see in color difference between phase one and phase two. The applicant may choose to do it all at once through the SDAP, but they wanted to reserve the opportunity to do a phasing, so they've outlined the phasing plan in that context. And I've reviewed it in overall context, as well as each phase element. So with that, I'd like to just kind of run through the slides and give you a visual representation of what's happening.
Okay, before you do, okay. I wanted to ask about an adjacent development. Is it that Baker's Hillside?
Baker's Hillside. To the south, and I can kind of show you where we...
What I was curious about is in your CEDA, because I think it's mentioned on the CEDA checklist, and that's up to my attention. Is that something that you would consider cumulative impacts, or did it in any way impact how you might review this application, or is this totally standalone?
This is standalone because we review based on what the request is. However, the same party owns both sites now, and they're looking to do some coordination with the context of the roadway improvements of Hogan Lane. But But each project is based on its own merits. Would that adequately address what you were?
Yes, I think you opened the door a bit as far as if there's any opportunity to do a coordinated development, access, utilities, or some of the other elements shared by both developments. We'd want to take note of that. It's something aware of as it moves forward. So, yes, thank you.
So that this is just kind of an outline of the county. You sort of know roughly where we are, so I'm not going to go into that in any further detail. But it's essentially north of Dyce Inlet, kind of at the head of Dyce Inlet, off of State Route 303, or what we commonly refer to as Wobble Way. And you'll see that in just a minute in your slide. So this is kind of zooming in a bit, and you can see to the north, northwest, there is Ridgetop Junior High and Silver Ridge Elementary School.
Where are they?
Okay, so here's Junior High.
Ridgetop
Junior High. And then just to the east of it, this four pods, is the elementary school. And
is it also Ridgetop?
It's Ridgeview.
No. And the reason this becomes important, of course, is because there's a walking distance. So.
Silver Ridge. And then just to the north of the subject properties outlined here in green, this is actually a county-owned park. This school uses it.
Lot
022, that's owned by county parks.
So that affected your review then, too, because you need to have some kind of recreational space.
Recreational space is specific to the subdivision. You're going to see that when we get to the site.
Okay.
Schools do not like people traveling into their areas during school time. So there are concerns with regard to safety. So there's not an expectation that people from the plat will just be on that area. Now they could technically go to the county park, mm-hmm. but generally there wouldn't be an expectation. And particularly they have a recreational area.
Okay.
And then the next slide is just to give you an indication of the critical areas overlaid on that area. And so what I want to point out on this slide, and it's referenced again in the staff report, you probably saw that, but there's an indication of a stream, what we typically state as a stream here running through the property. Mm-hmm. However, there was a question about that, and they had DNR, which does the stream typing, evaluate it and determine whether, in fact, there was a stream. And Exhibit 7 outlines that, in fact, DNR has determined that it's not a stream. At some point, our records will be updated and we'll have new mapping that will be done with the context of that, and that will be visible then when that happens. But that can take years before we get data from them to correct our maps. But so that's why you're seeing this stream run here, but in fact, it's been determined that it's not a stream. And I also gave you, in the context of critical areas, that in fact there is a critical aquifer on a portion of the property, kind of the southeast corner here. But as you know, residential development is not a concern in the context of critical aquifer recharge, Category 1 even. But I'm just providing it for your benefit.
Let's get a little bit more detail on that. Where is it located?
Okay, so the green outline are the two subject properties, mm-hmm. and this... I don't know, salmon color?
Yeah.
Is the Category 1 critical aquifer recharge area. So you can see it's pretty extensive in this area in general. So it's just this southeast corner of the subject properties, kind of roughly here. Can you see the arc that I'm doing with the mouse?
Yeah, and your statement is that it didn't affect how you reviewed?
What I'm stating is that it's not, residential development is not a use that is a concern. context of critical operation charge. We're talking about a gas station, which we're not. That would be a whole different story.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be additional reports that would need to be done, but not for single-family residential. Dry cleaners, there's a whole host of.
Okay, that's your statement in the staff report. I did take note of that. Stated that, quote, single-family development is not a threat. It doesn't require any further analysis of reports within this recharge area. And I was curious about that, whether that is a matter of county code or a matter of law or a matter of planner practice.
Title 19.
Of your county.
Yes. I think it's section 600.
600. I'm very familiar with this. Is what they have to sound. Well, and the reason I ask about that is that's not always the case in other jurisdictions.
So moving on, I just gave you kind of, I zoomed in to give you a close-up look. You can see that this site is heavily vegetated with, you know, forest mix of deciduous diverse trees. There will be a requirement of a forest practices application, but we commonly refer to it as FPA, with the site development activity. Condition 5. And then I just gave you another view, just because I think the one that's straight down from our county system isn't necessarily as helpful to kind of get a sense of what that vegetation would look like. So I use another image here. And I'm just going to outline roughly where this is. So the west property line is running approximately here, up this, across here, and then down just about here. The this mapping system doesn't give you any property lines. So it's just kind of, you have to glasses, which I see you have on.
So. I do. So show me once again.
So I'm going to run up the east line since I'm already there. Well, yeah. Okay, so this east line running roughly about here. And you can kind of see the vegetation sort of changes a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it runs up here, across the north, about here, and then down.
Heavily vegetated.
Okay, so this is the zoning map. You can see that the subject properties are zoned urban low. Everything around it is urban low. As you move further out, there's a change in designation. But one thing I want to kind of point out to you from this map, it's only really this map that you can see it, the access to this site is via Wagga Way here. It's a right-in, right-out only. Okay, so right-in, the acceleration lane in here. To come in, this is a mobile home park. Going up Nels Nelson Road to Hogan Lane here. Hogan Lane runs east-west. It is county-maintained to, I don't know, roughly about here, and then it's unmaintained past that. And it says that the dimensions end there. I don't remember what the numbers are. So then coming out of this site, and that was the concern from the public comment that we received,
yes,
is there should be another access. So as you exit out of, sorry, the mouse disappears, out of Nels Nelson, you have to take a right out. It's the only way you can go here. And there is an acceleration lane to come up. Up the hill, and kind of steep grade there. In the context of a second access, so let me step back. The state has evaluated this. Because of access, there's no mitigation from the state, there's no concerns, they haven't stipulated anything for it. Okay? Because the roadway system is what it is, and it's adequate for existing traffic. In the context of the county, we don't have any specific requirements at this intersection or along Nels Nelson. There are requirements for Hogan Lane, which we'll get to in a minute. The comment then was that there should be a second access. Well, in reality, there's no place to for this subdivision. You can't move down Hogan Lane to the west because there's no place to actually connect. It looks like maybe there could be, but there isn't from safety standpoints because of how you exit off of Wagga Way to reach Ridgetop. There's topography issues, but also just here it looks like it's a flat piece of paper and it's simple. It's not out in the real world. And there would be huge state. You would not want to create more traffic at this intersection point because you've got a lot of traffic traveling off of here and then catching up to Ridgetop. So there's not an opportunity there. There's not an opportunity to go through the school. And there's no way to really connect with this subdivision, you know. Had this subdivision been maybe something that was done in the last couple of years, we might have had an issue of connectivity. We could maybe address it.
It's been blocked by development.
Exactly. And there's not a way to create it now. The other thing is that zoning, I'm not sure historically what the zoning is in this particular spot. If it might have been a little bit something different, and I'm talking 20 years ago, I can't say for sure when this development was done, but it may be that old or older. So, it doesn't. It is what it is.
So you explored that possibility, but found due to topography and surrounding developments, it's not possible to have
a connection. Correct. And in light of the fact that the state did not require mitigation of either some light or some other element, that was a further indication that the traffic created approximately 600 average daily trips, 61 bots. They're averaging 10 average daily trips, 610. But there's still more than adequate capacity within this highway system. And I'm going to go ahead and use this map just because of the overall reach of the visual. But we're requiring road frontage improvements along Hogan Lane from this point at Nels Nelson, where it then connects to Hogan, to the west point of this development. And it's covered in the staff report. But I just wanted you to see here, because when I go to the site plan, you're not going to have that visual cue to see that. So there's going to be shoulder improvements. This portion, sidewalk improvements on the frontage. And we'll see that with the next slide.
Go back to the state review for just a moment. Do they give you level of service, or do they just give you total vehicle trips?
The vehicle trips are what we calculate based on the manual.
When you say they have no concerns, are they relating it to level of service?
I can't speak to how they do their review, but their application is sent to them.
And it's in the record we have in front of us about that comment, is it? I'm curious about where you
exhibit 9. That's the TIA.
But did you have it reviewed by Watchdog?
Yes, the application is sent to them automatically.
And you got something back?
I can't put my finger on the exhibit, but I know that we have had conversations. It would have been through the NOA that it was routed to them.
Mm-hmm. It's curious in terms of the mitigation, even in the TIA on page 14, that moderate evening peak hour volumes presently exist. This is a reference to Central Valley Road, SR-23 westbound, that's no Central Valley Road. Intersection ways are poorly moderate in the level service E. And E is typically red flag. Did that concern you? I understand you're looking at county standards and state standards.
Right. We would rely on the state. If there was some concern that they had that would require mitigation, they would have outlined the mitigation requirements to us. And they did not.
It's a nice paragraph. It's that issue lay is outlined. And this report states that, well, based on the LOS analysis, these would be heavy into levels F, eastbound turning units. Heavy delays are expected with out project rather. And based on 2,000 recreational lodges, overland lodges represent 2% of the
total. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they're referring to on eastbound, because you can't even go east if so. I don't know if they're talking about some other intersection, and I wonder if they're looking at Ridge Top or something.
Central Valley Road. And this
so Central Valley, they're over here. And you, so you see the mouse? Central Valley is clear over here.
Mm-hmm. Why would that be part of this track?
Because I may speak, but project applicants in here, out here for the record. Traffic going from Silverdale to get to Oakley Lane has to go to the Central Valley Road intersection and basically hang a U-turn to be back on the highway and continue westbound, because it is a right-in, right-out intersection on the north side of Wagaway. So traffic going to the Hogan neighborhood from Silverdale has to go down to Central Valley, go back over the overpass, and go back towards...
Can I show you on here what Mr. Ferris tried to say?
Okay.
So what he's saying is that I'm here, I'm going to head east on Wagaway. Okay. So I'm traveling down Wagaway, but I can't turn and go via Nels Nelson to Hogan, because it's controlled state highway. So I've got to go down here to Central Valley. There's a... Off-ramp. So I jump the off-ramp, and I do a little loop-de-loo, and I come back out, and I connect here. It's kind of hard to see, but you connect here, and then come back and swing on, and then you're back. So that's why they check that intersection. Mm.
What's the distance between those two roads?
Here?
Yeah, about 3/4 of a mile.
Not quite a mile, I guess. Mm. Yeah.
Hmm. That's the best that can be done, is what your testimony is.
That's right, and the state highway is not going to create new access points.
Right.
That's even bigger disaster.
And somewhere in your files, maybe you can find that and submit it after. But you want to have, is that WSDOT review, the statement that we have no issues with this. Because the traffic impact analysis kind of raises a red flag that there will be issues. It's going to be delayed. This might not increase it more than 2%. Still, I'd be much more comfortable having to make the conclusion that there'll be provisions, suitable provisions for ingress and egress if I have that document. And I'm not disbelieving that it exists. It would just be nice to have that. If you think it's available. Otherwise, you may be testifying about your phone branches. How you move forward. You want to give me a little more information?
I can tell you, I did not personally have a conversation with WSDOT, but it's very likely that one of my colleagues did. So we can check on that.
Yeah.
And it's also possible that there could be an email.
Let's do this. We have exhibits numbered through 34. So exhibit 35, keep the record open for information. Regarding the Washington State Department of Transportation review. Trafficking events. And that may take the form of an email. Maybe it's one of your staff that would prepare a memo of how they went about it. Right now it just seems a little bit of a missing piece. And I understand you based it on who you spoke to on staff as well. So we can find that. It can be an internal memo if that's all we have. Something from WSDOT itself would, of course, be the best. Let's see what we can do to fill that gap. Thank you.
Okay, so moving on to the phasing plan. This is just to give you a graphical representation. It's easier to see on this image than the next one, which is the site plan and landscape plan. It's basically the next image, just to show you, is the site plan and landscape plan. So I'm just backing up one just to show you the phasing really quick. It's just showing you in color. These are the two different phases. So the purple color here, or blue, whatever, is phase one. So here's the entry point coming into Holden Lane. And then the two stretches of roadway. And what you're seeing here is a cul-de-sac end until phase two comes online. So those cul-de-sacs would go away when phase two moves forward. If, in fact, they do it all at once, then it won't be an issue. But to lay it out so that if they do try decide to do phasing, they address that issue, they've covered fire marshal concerns with regard to fire apparatus access, emergency apparatus access. And then, of course, this salmon color is phase two. So in looking at each phase, and you'll see it outlined in the staff report, I look at the context of density, and each phase on its own meets the minimum density requirements, and the overall project does. In addition, as part of phase one, with the roadways that you see here in the purple, they will also be doing the stormwater facility and the recreational facility, which is right next door. So this is the stormwater facility area. This is a recreation facility area. Mark is open space, which is exhibit 26.
About the recreational space, I think you spoke to this before in your applications. What type of development is like active recreation? We have maybe certain requirements. Can we speak to that a little bit?
Yes. One of the things that we ask for at site development activity permit stage, the SDAP, is the details. So we don't necessarily look for the details at the preliminary stage, but when they get ready for the SDAP, they will specify what this is going to be and how it's going to look. So if there are a tot lot, they will show those features. If there's going to be a tot lot and, let's say, a basketball court, that feature will be shown on the SDAP, including benches for seating. If it's an open field on a portion, that will be detailed. If it's going to be, let's say, a community garden kind of element, that will all be specified at the time of SDAP.
Conditions that I don't have.
So, condition 12, it talks about the final landscape plan and the specifications.
Preparation. So we don't see anything on this plat.
Right, at the preliminary stage.
You're comfortable with that. That's
yes.
Sufficient space to be active recreational space.
Yes, this space is specified by code, 390 square feet per unit, and they are slightly over that threshold. And it's detailed on page 13. It outlines the requirement of 390 times 600 meters to 23,790 square feet. They've got 23,926 square feet. So they have the space required, that minimum. But we don't see that it's essential that we know that it's going to be a tot lot or a sport court or whatever that is. Because in some cases, they haven't quite figured out who their demographics are that they might be marketing. As far as parking goes, there will be parking. There's on-street parking. It's a required element, and that is outlined on the site plan. They've marked that, and that is sufficient for the project.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you mentioned stormwater, and I saw that your reference, I think, enhanced stormwater treatment.
I'm getting to that. Yep.
That's what you're going next.
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to talk about landscaping, and then I was going to go for the stormwater.
Okay.
But so I just wanted to point out that there are street trees required along the frontage here, as well as throughout the roadway feature, and that provides for a visual amenity, as well as it also serves stormwater function. It's not a stormwater quality quantity control per se, but it also helps in the context of stormwater by having the strategic element. So here's the stormwater facility, and yes, they're using a, they're doing water quality and quantity treatment. It is sort of a wet pond, and because Dyes Inlet is an identified location for enhanced treatment because of fecal coliform, they are doing a wet pond feature, which does provide for enhanced treatment because of that. It's due to the Clean Water Act 303D.
Because it's listed.
Because it's listed.
So, do you know more? Just, I know we don't want all the details of stormwater.
I'll let the engineer cover that in more specifications, because I'm not an engineer.
Making a finding of suitable provision for stormwater doesn't mean they have to have all the details, but this is an alert that it does get enhancement. Some information.
And they have provided, yes, that enhanced treatment. They probably outlined that to make it clear that they are doing it.
I have another question in the sand system. Kind of reviewing this, you touched on it earlier when you showed early on where the school locations are. I'm wondering if there's any sufficient for walking.
Yep, so I can show you that. So right here with the arrow, so at the end of what I call this temporary cul-de-sac here, you see this designation area here, it's essentially a walkway to the school. And in fact, that was coordinated with school personnel. The engineer worked directly with the CK school district for the location. At one time, I was suggesting perhaps that it come off the west side, but there's some topo issues, and the school actually preferred the location. Or is it here, Pat? Did I get it wrong?
A little further to the right.
Is this one?
Yes.
Okay. So it was coordinated, in fact, with the school, and it was their preference.
It should be loud.
Okay, so what Mr. Fuhrer is saying as the engineer is that when we see the SDAP, if they choose to do phase, that he's going to modify this so that it is part of this phase one, that will be an element.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, thank you for your recommendation. Anything more you want to add?
Yeah, I just want to point out that in the context of setbacks, it's the standard setbacks for the zone. They'll be required to put that on the final plat, so there won't be any questions as far as setbacks, but all the standard setbacks for the urban low zone. And just to let you know that all entities that do review have essentially recommended approval, in most cases, recommendations that's outlined in the staff report, and that we have outlined that it's consistent with the comprehensive plan and that the subdivision has made appropriate provisions for public health, safety, and welfare as required by RCW 58, which is subdivision related, as well as Title 16, in case of code, subdivision code, as well as those Title 17, but with regard to the subdivision, those two comments. And that's outlined as a point of order. Criteria in the staff report, so that was item 6.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, that there are conditions, so the department is recommending approval of this request with 60 conditions.
Thank you for the presentation and for orienting using PowerPoint and aerial views. It's helpful.
And I'm not sure if you can see it here, but there are sidewalks that extend out to the west end in case there's any future development to the west, as well as to the east. So it's a little bit hard to see on this image, but if you look at exactly 26 in your record, you'll see sidewalks that are along the frontage here that also connect with the sidewalks within.
Very good. Thank you. We'll turn now to the applicant's representative. Good morning, sir. Please take the oath. Use for to tell the truth testimony you give today.
I do.
Thank you. Your name for the record is?
My name is Pat Fuhrer. I'm a principal and professional engineer licensed in the state of Washington with the firm of Map Limited Engineers.
We look to the heavens when we speak in this room. We hope that our prayers are answered. For the record, we're chuckling because it's an unusual hearing room for
us. It really is.
And we've been instructed by the clerk to make sure we speak loudly and sort of in the direction of the pickup that's above our heads. So, Mr. Fuhrer, you've heard the discussion I've had with professional staff, and you've reviewed the staff report and the recommendation of 63 conditions. Is there anything you'd like to add or call into question?
The staff report appears very complete to me. I have no concerns reading it previously. The only thing that I would like to mention is, and Meg touched on it earlier, is that we did have some pretty significant correspondence and meetings and coordination with the CK School District. And I don't know, there is an email that was submitted by the CK School District. I'm not sure that got entered as an exhibit or not. I don't have a complete list of the exhibits.
I appreciate that bringing to our attention, because so often a school district does not get involved until it's too late.
Right.
And we've been trying to encourage here to contact is what you did. Yeah.
And I have no doubt, you know, our connection to the school district was not originally proposed until Kitsap County staff asked us to make that attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that that occurred, because both parties, including my client, agree that it's a amenity flat into the neighborhood.
Excellent.
So that worked out very well.
Good. I appreciate that.
Until it was mentioned today, I just didn't see it in the staff report. It's specific, but I know there is correspondence with them to the permanent.
There's Exhibit 24, which I think was the request that went out. And just from the...
Well, we have ample testimony in the fact that it's on your plat map. That's what we so often don't see. And the testimony might be, well, the school was notified, but they didn't respond. There's a lot going on in school districts, you know, and it's hard for them to respond to land use cases. So when you go out as an applicant, as a contact, as a staff, thank you for your testimony.
So
it modified your plan.
Exhibit 24, there's a lot of separate emails going back and forth. As you work your way through them, you'll see the responses.
Okay, very good. So that's going to work out fine, and we've learned it's proposed by your client as part of phase one. So that'll work well.
And reaching out to agencies kind of enters into the next part of that.
Okay.
I'd like to touch on is the coordination with WashDOT on the project.
Did you say coordination with WashDOT?
Right. To touch on what coordination may or may not have occurred with WashDOT. I don't. When we submit a project that requires more than 100 vehicle trips per day, we require to do a traffic impact analysis in Kitsap County. And you read portions of that analysis. I think the portions you were reading were discussing the existing level of service levels at the Central Valley Road intersection that are occurring today. And the Hogan Lane, based on his study, finds that the Hogan Lane project or area, what you touched on, is about 2% of that total traffic volume on a daily basis by his calculations.
Okay, and to clarify, I was looking at the recommended mitigation.
Okay.
And in fact, that was the final page of the report.
Okay.
That's what I was focused
on.
So thank you for bringing that up. So your point
I guess my point is if like many agencies, if they don't comment on the application, typically that's a sign of approval.
Mm-hmm.
Without specifically asking for their comments for any or every single project that comes along. I'm not disputing, maybe the Public Works Department did make comments.
It might be a memo that says, we notified, gave them information, didn't hear anything back, which we accept as the county,
right,
as not having.
I see when staff routes out the MDNS for comments to agencies, WashDOT is typically always included on the routing. And so I think they have the opportunity to review it. And that's probably not a question.
Well, in this plat, and you've worked on many plats, it is a bit unusual because of that one access point.
It is.
And it introduces a whole line of questioning. that we don't need to get into because nobody really is objecting to it. We had a comment letter that makes Hans mention, gee, can't you do another point? But didn't sound like someone that was concerned about impacts on their property as much as, sure, it'd be nice to have another access point. I think you'd agree on behalf of your client.
I would, and I also understand the neighbor's concern. We've all dating ourselves about how long we've been around, but I remember when Barker Creek flooded and had to close the state highway. That was probably 15 years ago. It was closed for a good 2 weeks to do emergency repairs, and there's no access to Hogan Lane in the neighborhood if that gets shut off. However, before it became a state highway, it was a county road, and there used to be a left turn lane off of Wagaway into Nels Nelson Road. When WashDOT took over the ownership and maintenance of Wagaway, they did a safety improvement project. Because of the site distance at that intersection, they closed that intersection and put up a Jersey barricade. But in light of the neighbor's comments, it would be awful easy in an emergency situation for WashDOT to open up those Jersey barricades and allow emergency access or property owner access to their properties fairly easily if that road had closed.
Yes,
emergency situation.
Good point. Yeah. And then into the plant itself, often there could be a fire marshal on access point. How did we deal with that?
I think, and maybe Candy can help me out here, but I think the county's policy, and it's been in several ordinances and codes ago, it may not be in the current code, but it used to, the old policy used to be that 100 lots or more require two access points to the public right of way. And so I don't know what that number particularly is based on, other than, you know, vehicle trips and that sort of thing. But 100 lots usually triggers the 2 points of access. So.
And bottom line on this one, I mentioned it's a bit unusual, peculiar, is as much as you might want a second access point, testimony. There isn't any place to go. Is that the bottom line?
Correct. The opportunity to extend the road to the north, I think, is very, very difficult due to topography. And also the proposed connection point is into an area that wasn't designed for additional neighborhood traffic. And the Ridgetop Boulevard area was approved as a master plan. Mm-hmm. And the schools and all that up there were all part of that original analysis, and this would be an additional burden on that neighborhood to try to provide an access to the north.
North, not possible. South, not possible. Or east?
East is the school district property and the track. The Hogan Lane end has a road in dead ends to the west of this project. There's no ability to access further to the west side.
Yeah. So it almost comes down to what might be called the doctrine of necessity. There's just this one point.
Correct.
And by necessity, it's the only one that can be used if this property is developed and it's designated for development in the comprehensive plan. So that's how you ended up with this proposal. Well, we'll take note of that. It's not something that we want to replicate in every plat. So it doesn't stand as a precedent for others, but in this case, it's the only thing that can be done. You did the best job you could. Right. Did you have a chance to look over the 63 conditions that are recommended by staff? And do you have any questions about those?
Well, I discussed with the client on the phone last evening, and he and I didn't see anything that we couldn't comply with. They're all very clear. Condition 50 is very clear on what the off-site improvements required are, and so I appreciate that clarity in the condition. And I also want to touch back on one other condition that I thought staff did very well explaining, and I want to touch on it because you brought up the enhanced treatment for stormwater.
Yes, well, thank you. I wanted to ask you.
Condition 26, oh, I'm sorry. Condition 32 is very well written and a great explanation of the requirement by the Stormwater Code, County Code Title 12, and that requires us to provide enhanced
water quality treatment for waters that discharge to a listed 303D body of water. So subdivisions on their own don't require enhanced treatment unless they drain to a 303D listed water.
And what does that mean to you, enhanced treatment?
Enhanced treatment is a higher level of phosphorus and different types of stormwater pollutant removal levels that are required for more typically commercial projects and heavy vehicular traffic projects. And so those are the type of enhanced, that's a design element that we use to design our best management practices to mitigate our stormwater quality.
And generally, how would that work in this case of the wet pond?
The wet pond is considered enhanced treatment when it is some standards in the design manual that allow it to be considered as enhanced treatment when it's a shallow depth that promotes vegetation growth for further pollutant uptake. I don't recall this treatment facility is, I think, less than 3 feet deep, which is part of the requirement to be designated as providing enhanced treatment.
Allow for vegetation uptake and also biofiltration.
And biofiltration and settling of many solids that are typically in stormwater runoff.
So it's maybe more space than you would otherwise see.
Correct. Right. It has a longer length to width ratio. So by doing that, we can show that our promoting settling of particles and that sort of thing. So we basically have to take the stormwater to one end of the pond prior to it discharging at the other end of the pond. Okay.
That's helpful. Thank you for that explanation. An engineer, I actually understand. That's a refreshing. And very simply put, that's how that works. Good. Thank you. So your client's in agreement. The conditions are reasonable and can be accomplished. No questions about the staff. Job in analyzing the application and finding consistent with the state statute as well as the local ordinances. So we should get forward and move this one on to approval. It's just afternoon, too, so there's another reason. Anything you wanted to add further?
No, thank you.
Okay, well then, anything from county?
Yes. So you did mention the TIA and mitigation that was listed in there. But the mitigation that was listed are requirements that we have as standard requirements, so we don't perceive them as separate mitigation. They talked about impact fees or something. That's just a requirement when that comes in, for instance.
Okay.
They had another one. I don't recall. I think there was three. They might have used the term mitigation. We don't see them as mitigation. They're requirements.
Right, I do. I think what you're pointing out is the impact fee is required by code. Sometimes there's a need for additional mitigation or future rent where that fee might go. Here, we're not doing that.
Right.
You're complying with the ordinance, but not taking any additional step as to where that mitigation money should be spent or if there's any other mitigation beyond the fee. The bottom line is the rent mitigation fee. Along with the improvements. Okay. Good. Thank you. Make sure that's clarified. Any further from you? It looks like you want to speak.
Yes, I do.
Okay. You swear to tell truth and testimony you give?
Yes. My name is Candy Mercel with the Department of Community Development. I'm the Development Engineering Specialist. I would just like to clarify with you that it became a little unclear with further discussion, but your intention is still to have the record remain open for submittal of information from the State Department of Transportation. Is that right?
Well, thank you, because I said I was about to close the record, but no, I'm going to modify that. This record's going to be kept open through March 17th, a week from today, in order to obtain email, memo, internal memo, or some expression in writing regarding the position of the Washington State Department of Transportation with reference to State Route 303. And we want to be able to rely upon that for a finding that there is no concern of the Department of Transportation as to the impact of this project on that state highway.
Thank you. And I can coordinate with the clerk on getting that information to you?
Yes, please do so. We mentioned now that Constance does an excellent job of forwarding information to us. Pretty much in constant contact throughout the month, and making sure we have all the information needed for the police and records.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Can we have the record close automatically once that information is provided to you? Like, for instance, if
yes.
we got it to you tomorrow,
yes.
could the record close as of that date rather
it,
than
it can. Mm-hmm. There'll be no delay in issuing the decision. Issue within 10 days.
Very good.
Yes, that's important. Okay. Well, then, with record kept open for the receipt of that related Exhibit 35, we will then adjourn this hearing and issue this decision within the next 10 working days. Thank you all for your
participation. Thank you.
Record is still going.
Yes.